Senate will come to order. Roll call for the chief clerk.
Anderson.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Dockstader.
Here.
Elliott.
Here.
Esquivel.
Here.
Geis.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Honeycutt. Jennings.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Larson.
Here.
Martin.
Here.
Massey.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Meyer S.
Here.
Nicholas. Perkins.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Ross.
Here.
Schiffer.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Sessions.
Here.
Townsend.
Here.
Von Flatern.
Here.
President Hines.
Here.
Honeycutt.
Here.
Nicholas.
Excused.
29 present, 1 excused.
Prayer, Pastor Nelson.
Well, you and I find ourselves in somewhat different arenas of leadership, church and state. You're not supposed to mix those sometimes, but we all find ourselves sometimes trying to lead people in places they don't want to go. And the only way we get there is, you know, kicking and screaming all the way. And sometimes they object vehemently too. And sometimes we sadly find that people who were our allies last week, this week are leading the resistance, and we wonder what's going on. And leadership is a tough role, and we find ourselves realizing that it's never quite as fun on the inside as it is looking on the outside. But when it's all said and done, I think we all want to be able to sit back and say, you know what, I made a difference right there. And it's a good difference. And the people in my church or in my state are the better for it. So let's pray. Lord, sometimes it's hard to be a leader and get things done because there are those people who just don't see it our way, and they criticize and they oppose, and they can be just mean. And sometimes it's people who we thought were our friends, and we work hard to do the things we believe will benefit others, and they take pot shots at us, and they question our intelligence and our integrity, and so we get angry and frustrated and tired. And some days we just want to pack it up and go home and forget it. Lord God, I pray for these men and women as they struggle with that resistance and that criticism and with their motivation and with their desire to lead well. And I pray that they would be full of knowledge and wisdom and humility and patience, that they would be strong and have vision. I pray that they would do right in your eyes and bless you and the people of this state. Amen.
Amen. Join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the reading clerk please read the Journal Committee report?
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports at the Journal of February the 23rd, 2010, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Dockstader, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. Doctor of the Day, Tom Radosevich, M.D. from Casper. And the nurse is Sally Meyer from Cheyenne Regional Medical Center. Thought for the day, the greatest thing in the world is not as much as where we are, but in what direction we are going. House bills and first reading. Senator Ross, Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. I respectfully request that House Bill 132, Homicide During Pregnancy, which was assigned to Committee Number 1, be re-referred to Committee Number 10, Labor. Spoke with the Chairman of Labor concerning that and respectfully request that that be reassigned.
Without objections, House Bill 132 will be reassigned to Committee Number 10, Labor. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, I respectfully request that House Bill 19, Mandatory Savings Accounts for Inmates, and House Bill 115, Specific Purpose Excise Tax Voter Petition, be reassigned to Highways and Transportation. I have spoken to the chairman of that committee.
Without objections, that was House Bill 19 and House Bill 115. Is that correct? Be reassigned to Committee Number 8, Transportation. Okay, House bills in first reading. House Bill 113, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 113, sponsored by Representative Qualberg, Concealed Weapons Authority, an act relating to concealed weapons. Passed the House on third reading in an amended form, ayes 42, noes 15, excused 3.
House Bill 113 will be assigned to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 67, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 67, sponsored by Representative Illaway, Data Processing Center, Sales Use and Tax Exemption, an act relating to taxation and revenue. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 55, noes 3, excused 2.
House Bill 67 is assigned to Committee Number 3, Revenue. House Bill 70, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 70, sponsored by Representative Pedersen, Vacant Land, an act relating to taxation and revenue. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 50, noes 7, excused 3.
House Bill 70 is assigned to Committee Number 3, Revenue. House Bill 64, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 64, sponsored by Representative Millen, Mandatory Minimum Sentence for Sexual Abuse of a Minor, an act relating to crimes and offenses. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 52, noes 6, excused 2.
House Bill 64 is assigned to Committee Number 10, Labor. Reports from standing committees.
February the 24th, 2010, Mr. President, your Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 86, engrossed, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senate Chairman. February the 24th, 2010, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 124, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Esmeyer, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 24th, 2010, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 61, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Esmeyer, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 24th, 2010, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 37, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Esmeyer, Perkins, and Session. No, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 24th, 2010, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Joint Resolution 4. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Esmeyer, Perkins, and Session. No, Senator Ross. Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 23rd, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 18, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Cole, Dockstader, Jennings, Esmeyer, Senator Burns, Chairman. February the 23rd, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Joint Resolution 8, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Cole, Dockstader, Jennings, Esmeyer, Senator Burns, Chairman. February the 23rd, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 10, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Hastert, and Johnson. Noes, Senator Case and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. February the 23rd, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 5, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, Johnson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. February the 23rd, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 6, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, Johnson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. February the 23rd, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was assigned referred House Bill 49, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Larson, Martin, Perkins, Schiffer. No, Senator Case, Senator Schiffer, Chairman. February the 23rd, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 101, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. President, may I have permission of the floor?
You may.
Okay. My fellow senators, today is Pink Ribbon Day, a special day in the Wyoming legislature. And it's where we are sponsoring and supporting the Coleman Race for the Cure. Before I introduce our ladies up in the balcony, our people up in the balcony, I would like to share with you what we won last year. Here is our trophy from last year that we received on the outside steps of the Capitol. And it says, 2009 first place for a community team. So I want you to think very carefully today about the notice you will receive. Write your check out so I can put it right in this envelope for this coming year in August. So, and I want to thank you because I think that all those racers that were present at the race in last August were very, very surprised when we received the first place for the numbers of people participating. So, we are celebrating breast cancer survivorship, and we are honoring those who have lost their battle with that disease. It is also a day when we recognize the activists of the Coleman, Wyoming affiliate and their individual contributions to the breast cancer movement. Please join me in welcoming several volunteers and staff the Wyoming affiliate of the Susan G. Komen for the Cure for the Race, and they are in the galley.
Welcome to the gallery. Glad to have you here today.
And, Mr. President, just as a follow-up, it's through the events like the race for the Komen Race for the Cure that more than $2 million has been raised to support critical funding necessary for research equipment, screening, and treatment of breast cancer. And over 75% of these funds stay in Wyoming for our citizens. Please join me by, and I've already ask you to fill out the form that you will be receiving and write your checks, and let's see if we can get this first place trophy again next year. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Sessions. Senator Burns.
President, one of the bills that was read in on the committee reports was House Bill 18, Aquatic Invasive Species. And that bill has an appropriation. I ask that you re-refer that to committee number 2, Appropriations.
Bill is re-referred to committee number 2, Appropriations, without objections. Senator Ross, Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. I believe House Bill 61 was read in, which is legal services funding. It has an appropriation. It needs to be re-referred to committee number 2.
House Bill 61 will be referred to committee number 2, Appropriations, without objections. Senator Townsend.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I have the pleasure or privilege of the floor, please?
You may.
Thank you. I'd like to announce to the Senate that we have our annual group of eighth graders coming from Newcastle Middle School. And they're up behind the president. We'd like to have them stand and give them a big welcome. Also, Mr. President, we have another group coming. They split them up so they can all see it, what happens on both sides. Thank you.
Thank you, and welcome to the Senate, Newcastle 8th graders. Senator Coe.
May I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
In the balcony, we have from the University of Wyoming, the Wyoming Futures class. I'm not quite sure where they are. They're over here with Pete Simpson. Please welcome them.
Welcome to the Senate, and I guess if you're Wyoming Futures, you're picking out your seat down here. Senator Sessions. Oops.
Have some guests to introduce, and first I would like to say that the individuals up in the gallery here have been very active all over the United States. And if you'll remember, a couple of years ago, we passed our registration for sex offenders based upon the Jessica's Law. And so I would like to introduce to you Stacy Rumnap from a nationally recognized child advocate outreach and education agency, Stop Child Predators. The organization is based in Washington, D.C., working with law officials, lawmakers, parents, and others keeping ahead of the sexual predator trends. Our second guest is the one you have seen in the news. Mr. Mark Lunsford is an intrepid advocate protecting children against sex offenders. Mr. Lunsford's own daughter, Jessica, was a victim in Florida whom Jessica's Law is named after. Instead of doing what many of us would do, hiding or going crazy, this amazing dad has traveled around the United States educating, working with parents, legislators, and law officials on all the ways, different ways we can protect children, all in the name of his own tragedy. Please help me in welcoming them to the Wyoming Senate.
Welcome to the Wyoming Senate. Glad to have you here today. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business. No, excuse me. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
Thank you, Mr. President. Yes, we do. Third reading consent list is as follows. House Bill 2, Veterinarians. House Bill 4, Criminal Procedure, Time Limits for Competency Evaluations. House Bill 7, Election Code Revisions. House Bill 12, Juvenile Detention Facilities Admissions Criteria. House Bill 13, Underage Drinking. House Bill 16, Private School Licensing Exemption.
Would anyone like any of these bills removed from the consent list? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? House Bill 2, House Bill 4, House Bill 7, House Bill 12, House Bill 13, and House Bill 16. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Elliott?
Aye.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Meyer-S?
Aye.
Nicholas? Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
Aye.
Bonflatern?
Aye.
President Hines?
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 ayes. House Bill 2, are there any changes? Closing vote? Closing vote closed. House Bill 2, 30 ayes. House Bill 4, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 4, 30 ayes. House Bill 7, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 7, 30 ayes. House Bill 12, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 12, 30 ayes. House Bill 13, are there any changes? Cooper, aye to no. Scott, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no. Bebout, aye to no. Geis, aye to no. Peterson, aye to no. Meyer, aye to no. Dockstader, aye to no. Anderson, aye to no. Nicholas, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 13, 20 ayes, 10 noes. House Bill 16, are there any changes? Burns, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. House Bill 16, 29 ayes, 1 no.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majorities of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 2, House Bill 4, House Bill 7, House Bill 12, House Bill 13, and House Bill 16 have passed the Senate. Considerations of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business. Considerations of bills on general file.
Thanks, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Perkins.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 22. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 22, sponsored by Representative Anderson, Streamline Sales and Use Tax Amendments, an act relating to taxation and revenue. It was assigned to Committee Number 3, Revenue, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Case, Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill? It was a long day yesterday, wasn't it? You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Schiffer.
Push, don't pull, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 22, Streamlined Sales Use Tax Amendments. Mr. Chairman, what this does, again, this goes to the Streamlined Sales Tax Agreement. That's the taxation on internet sales and those type of things to keep us current with that system as it moves forward. What this bill does, it's what the department's been doing, but we're required under the streamlined sales tax agreement to have it in statute. Just by way of background, a study out of the University of Tennessee. If this system goes national, sales tax collections for our state would go from $1.5 million up to $48 million, of which we have to deduct roughly 20% back out to be paid to the for vendor compensation. What this portion of the amendment to get us in compliance with the Streamlined Sales Tax Agreement does is it says when we're taxing the items covered under the bill, and I'll walk through them, if we don't have any other way to locate where the tax is paid, it goes to the address, the physical address of the person who does the purchasing. And that is, and you'll see it referenced several times, that is the Romanet 1, big capital E. That's what it's referring to. That's place of residence. Mr. Chairman, I'll walk through the bill, and then I'll try and answer the questions, if there are any. What we add, starting on page line 2 at the top, these are the services surrounding purchase of a cell phone contract. It goes on down on line 12, prepaid calling service. That's where you contract with a cell phone. And it adds the words, and prepaid wireless calling service. Again, that's we're adding that dimension. That's to pick up in lieu of what we used to say is mobile telecommunications service, which I have to admit, from my perspective, is much clearer. but we now call it prepaid wireless calling service. That paragraph, Romanet I, big capital E, you'll see down on line 17, that's physical address. Going on over for under 3916104, at the top of page 3, the use tax there, the same exact, same wording, so we cover up sales tax and the use tax. That's really all this bill does. At the bottom of page 3, you have a repealer. That's subsection F, Romanet V. And what that deletes is the multiple point of use, or what those of us in the industry that are well-versed call that the MPU form. And that what that does is that if the seller can deliver a form to the purchaser, and the purchaser signs it, it relieves the seller of the obligation to pay the tax, and the purchaser must pay the tax. What we're doing is saying, nope, we're not going to go through the old MPU process. We're going to go right, if there's no other way to identify it, it's the physical address. Mr. Chairman, that's the bill. The way this bill is crafted, for our purposes in this state, it is revenue neutral.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. Have any questions or about the bill?
Question.
Sure. Senator Nicholas.
He thought it. But if you would talk a little bit on the streamlined sales tax initiative, how's it going? Are states joining in? Are we going to be a lone state out there? Is it good for, with this, the whole destination? Where are we going to tax on the destination or the receiving state? But does it look like it's going to work? Is it ever going to be adopted? And is this working out well for our suppliers out of the state?
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, a little bit of history. The streamlined sales tax agreement process has actually been going on, as I recall, it's about 7 years now. So it's moving probably as rapidly as what it needs to. In terms of compliance, in terms of other states buying into it, they have not all bought into it. As I recall, the figures seem to me 39 states are in the process. Now, that doesn't mean that they're entirely statutorily compliant. Some states have opted into parts of it. Some states have gone wholeheartedly. Where Wyoming sits right now, we are pretty much bought into it. We've adapted it, and that's really what this bill does. We're going to be compliant in this area, but we're right on the edge. It seems to me that the approach has to be on one of these national deals. We've got to make sure we take care of what's relevant, what's appropriate, what's acceptable in this state. The hard part we've had, and this bill is a perfect example, we try and keep them revenue neutral. This is not intended, nor any of these that I've seen in my stint as chairman of revenue, to say that this is a tax-raising measure. What we're finding in some other states, or what I've been told, other states are using compliance with the agreement as a lever, if you will, to raise taxes. And that complicates it. And that's why I say we haven't bought in 100% to the direction that some of the other larger states with a much higher volume than us, are kind of pushing this thing that this is a revenue producer. We've kind of shied away from that. So we are compliant, but we're right on the edge. I guess if I had to describe how we're approaching this, We're going willingly, but not enthusiastically. But we are going to try and stay compliant, given those policy restrictions that I mentioned earlier.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a question on it, too, kind of like the question that the good senator from Albany County has brought up. Has there been, I know it's not supposed to be revenue neutral, but has there been a substantial stream of revenue that has been coming in from the streamlined tax program? And one time I heard also that, and maybe you can identify this, that actually there are some companies out there that voluntarily submit revenue to the state that they collect for this. Is that pretty much where we're at on this thing on course? In other words, is it actually generating some revenue, even though maybe it's supposed to be revenue neutral to the state?
Senator Schiff.
Chairman, good question. Yes, it is generating revenue. I mean, understand, we tax these products. What we're trying not to do is say, all right, we're going to enhance the tax because we're changing, for example, in this case, the person that's paying the tax, we're going to identify them by their physical residence. Our thought is we want to make sure we don't increase the tax in order to comply with that. And that's why we're shaving the line a little bit. But, yes, these people do pay taxes. I mean, they're bona fide tax-paying businesses in our state and have been paying tax all along. It's not that we're trying to grab in new sources of taxes or raise rates, the things that in some states we're seeing happen. We're trying not to do those things. We're trying to hold it and say we want to make sure we maintain the taxes that are there and that we place it, the burden, on the appropriate party and stay compliant with the agreement. And that's why I say we haven't jumped into this as hard as, there again, as I understand, if you go down the list of states that are revenue deficit in this day and age, they're being aggressive, I think, is the only word you could use to describe it. And that is not our approach.
Thanks, Senator Schiffer. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the state, that the committee of the whole, let's see. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the committee of the whole rises report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 22, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion passes. Senate file, or House Bill 22 has passed committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 26. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 26, sponsored by the Labor Committee, Medical Review Panel, an act relating to the administration of government. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schaefer, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 26 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I think it would be best to explain the bill first, and then we'll come back and read the standing committee amendment in. So I yield to Senator Hastert for an explanation of the House bill.
Thanks, Senator Scott. Senator Hastert, and I would just tell you that the amendment was distributed a couple days ago.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe the good chairman moved the bill. The medical review panel bill that you have in front of us, what we're trying to do, the medical review panel, as you all know, is a prerequisite for claimants wishing to file a claim against a health care provider. You know, they must go through the panel before filing a claim in court. And I think what we're trying to do here, the bill seeks to streamline and improve the medical review panel process to encourage increased participation and addresses certain health care provider concerns. Mr. Chairman, some of what we're trying to do here is we want more people to utilize the system. We haven't had the history, I guess, so far hasn't been that there's been a lot of great success. There's been some concerns over admissibility, and basically it was thought to be almost be like a dual court trial, if you will. And so what we're doing is streamlining and making certain that certain evidence is in this part of the process is inadmissible. The changes in the bill were suggested by the attorney for the medical review panel, Mr. Chairman, and one of the changes is procedural timing for the beginning of the panel reviews, and then the other changes ensure that testimony heard, as I spoke to, would not be admissible in future proceedings. The uncertainty of admissibility was apparently the major stumbling block, and then also the reporting requirement we have at the end of the bill. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, that's in essence the bill. And I think you'll see the amendment does come changes a little bit further that I'll let the chairman of the Labor Committee explain.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Hassler. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, could we have the Standing Committee amendment read in at this point?
Yes. House, will the reading clerk please read the amendment.
House Bill 26, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, page 1, line 3.
Thank you, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, move adoption of this amendment. Mr. Chairman, you've heard the explanation of the bill, and I really would advise the Senate that the medical review panel in its current form is a failure, and it's just not being used very much. And so we were seeking, because the testimony was we were having a lot of parties opting out because they weren't sure whether it was admissible in court or not, and that made a big difference in what kind of a presentation they put on. And so what happened was the bill came in saying it is not admissible. In the House, they put on an exception, and the testimony was that recreated the uncertainty all over again. So what the Standing Committee amendment does is remove that exception. Exception was that you could bring something in from the panel for the purpose of impeaching the witnesses, and that created the uncertainty again. So what we did is we took that out, and so with the Standing Committee amendment, if you look on page 2, starting at line 14, subsection C will be left intact on lines 14 through 17, and the rest of it will be, the new language will be removed, and as in the bill is introduced, the old language will be stricken and repealed, so that you cannot bring anything from the hearing before the review panel into court. That's what the amendment does. I'd be happy to answer any questions on it.
Thanks, Senator Scott. Are there questions? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 26, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is passed. Senator Scott, we're back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to say one thing further on this bill. As I said, it's my judgment this review panel is a failure because it's not being used much and therefore isn't making much difference. We have two choices. Either we could radically redo it, make it a real trial, put a lot of teeth into it, and we could do that under the Constitution, or we can clarify this business of are the results and the proceedings admissible in court, say, no, they're not, and see if we can get the current one to work. That's the version that the Joint Committee opted for, and that's what this bill does. If this doesn't work, then down the line, I think we've got, as a practical matter, a choice at some point. Either we need to get rid of this thing, admit it didn't work, or we need to take a radically different approach and strengthen it. But for now, the recommendation contained in this bill is let's try to fix what we've got.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment. I find this kind of amazing that here we are. But if you were here when we originally had this debate over the medical review panel, it was the doctors who were screaming that everything had to be admissible. And it was the trial lawyers on the other side saying, no, we don't want it admissible. And so here we are, the exact situation that we had this debate about, which had the kind of a middle point where the court could decide if it was admissible or not, is proven to be unworkable. I do support the bill, but I just find it quite humorous in some respects that here we are over the very issue that caused so much problem in the medical review panel the first time, and now they're saying we need to have it be inadmissible.
Thank you, Senator Ross. Are we ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion with the committee whole rise to report to do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 26, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 26 has passed committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 32. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 32, sponsored by Representative Stubson, Board of Nursing Continuing Jurisdiction, and Act Relating to Professions and Occupations. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 32 do pass. There were no standing committee amendments, and I yield to Senator Landon for an explanation of the House bill.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank our Chairman of Labor and Health as well. House Bill 32, Senators, goes into the statute pertaining to duties and jurisdiction of the State Board of Nursing. There are two provisions in this bill. One is continuing jurisdiction, and the other is administrative subpoenas. Unfortunately, this bill comes about because of a loophole in the way we recertify and relicense our nurses. Every 2 years, our nurses in Wyoming are relicensed. The Attorney General has read our statutes as not giving the Board of Nursing continuing jurisdiction in the case of cases that might come about during the time that a nurse is certified or licensed, and therefore the nurse is allowed to simply let that license lapse, and then the Board has no jurisdiction to go ahead and proceed with any review of that case. The Board of Nursing needs these two amendments to retain that ability to discipline nurses and nursing assistants who have violated this Nurse Practice Act. And these violations can include any number of things. It could be, diverted narcotics from patients. It could be stolen property. Quite honestly, we are entrusting our most precious things to these nurses. And we expect that behavior to be up to snuff. I'm sorry to say that over the last 5 years, there have been about 40 of these cases that have lapsed because of this lack of the ability of the Board of Nursing to go ahead and pursue these cases. And what can happen is then these nurses, when they allow their certifications or licenses here in Wyoming to lapse, then they're able to just go across the border to neighboring states, go ahead and be licensed there. This bill obviously would address that problem, Mr. Chairman. I would go to the bill now and walk you through it very quickly. At the bottom of page 1, 3321.122, that's the statute governing the powers and duties of the Board of Nursing. Subsection C is under there is where the substance of the bill resides. Romanet numeral 9, ladies and gentlemen, is the part of the bill that relates to the subpoenas, and that will do a couple of things for the State Board of Nursing. It will allow for administrative subpoenas to happen at a little quicker pace, and that can be of benefit to nurses that may have been accused of something and are found to be innocent of that. So it does that. I think that's the gist of that particular section. If you turn to Romanet numeral 10, this is the meat of the bill where the board retains jurisdiction over a person issued a license, certificate, etc., and then after that permit has expired. So anything that took place during the time that nurse was certified or licensed, that jurisdiction would continue. I just wanted to add to what I've been telling you about this bill that, quite honestly, we've had some very serious cases. For example, we had a nurse with an opiate dependency, was stealing drugs from a hospice patient. We had another case where a certified nurse's assistant stole more than $9,000 from an in-home care patient of hers. In 2006, we had an RN who was a meth user and unfortunately was able to go on to two more states. And what happens is when that jurisdiction doesn't continue, senators, then we're not able to put that information on a national database. And that's where these disciplinary measures end up. Other states would then be able to see that this nurse has been disciplined in the state of Wyoming. So that's a quick run through of the bill. I would stand for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Lennon. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just kind of curious. Do any other licensing boards have subpoena powers? I was just looking. There are about 30 other boards and commissions and so forth, everything from the Board of Nursing, the Board of Medicine, Board of Pharmacy, the Embalming Board. So I'm wondering, are we extending a power or an authority to them that is not extended to any of these others? And my concern here is, if we do extend it to them, what's our reasoning for not extending it to a number of other boards?
Thanks, Senator Burns. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know about all the other boards, but specifically the Board of Medicine does have this power, and they came and testified in committee that it was extraordinarily useful to them in terms of getting at what's going on, getting the innocent cleared more rapidly, and being able to dispose of, in their case, physicians that had a problem. So, yes, at least the Board of Medicine done this and has found it quite useful.
Thanks, Senator Scott. Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And just to add to what the good chairman said, the language on page 2 of this bill probably does look a little bit familiar, because in this chamber last year, we spent quite a bit of time on rewrites of the Medical Practice Act. This language is taken directly and parallel to that particular piece of legislation that was passed last year.
Thanks, Senator Landon. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise report, they do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 32, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. House Bill 32 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 41. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 41, sponsored by the Education Committee, School Finance Distance Education, an act relating to school finance. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cole, Massey, Sessions, Von Platern. No, Senator Jennings, Senator Co-Chairman.
deferred the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Mr. Chairman, I move when committee the whole rise and report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 41 and defer to Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. School finance distance education, House Bill 41. What this bill does is you all probably have a good idea that local resources are the amount of money towards education that are collected locally. That's your property tax. So if the formula says that you may receive $10,000 for each student in your school and you only collect $9,000 in local resources, of course, the state makes up the difference and then transportation and everything else additional to that. But an unintended consequence of virtual schools and distance education was that a student could be in Natrona County, choose to take virtual school provided by Niobrara, and he has an option. He can remain a resident of Natrona's school district, or he can elect to be a resident, even staying in Casper, but be a resident of Niobrara as counted as a school in the school district. So his total ADM would go to Niobrara. But if he remains a resident of Casper's school district, still taking the K-12 education through virtual, then all Natrona does is write a check to Niobrara to pay for his virtual school system. That check then goes right to the contractor that Niobrara is using. Well, unfortunately, the way our formula works, that $8,000 or $9,000 that Natrona just sent to Niobrara, which they just really passed through to a contractor that's providing the virtual school, now is counted as $9,000 that they've collected in local resources. So you put the formula together, they get this huge boost, and all these non-resident students using their virtual school, they get a lot smaller check from the state, although they're just passing this money on. So that was counted against them. So what this bill does, page 2, line 13 through 16, it says, but excluding any tuition assessed by a district for the provisions of distance education programs to participating non-resident students pursuant to statute 21-13-330. So this is just a way of correcting that little glitch in our system, which was put together before virtual schools are available, so that just basic tuition sent to another school isn't counted against that district as their local resources, and they still get the same ADM that they always received based on their local property tax and any other funding they may receive. So I ask for your favorable vote for House Bill 41.
Thank you, Senator Von Flatern. Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was in the no vote in committee on this one. And reason is we're getting ready to go into recalibration, and we should definitely take a look at this. But right now, what we do is this is a way to poach students. You have a school district out here, and we've given them a model, or we've developed a model, figured out how to fund them. We have all the brick and mortar and the teachers and the computers and everything that was supposed to be in there stuck in there. But what we've had is school districts go out and buy this software and contract with people to train students distance learning. Now, distance learning is a good thing, but we need to wrap our arms around a better way to do it, because we have a school district up in the Northeast doing it, and we have another one down in the Central East, and all these school districts are putting these things together, and then they're reaching out to another district, and they're pulling students in. That's not the way our school districts were put together. That's not the way we funded them. So now we're going in there and saying, that's okay. Now we're going to rewrite it and refund it and figure out how to do it. I think we should vote no on this. I think it should be something that we address in the recalibration examination and decide how we put virtual or distance learning into the schools. But each school district having a software package and having this training in there, and then reaching out and pulling a student from another school district, I don't think it's the right way. And I would ask that you defeat this bill.
Thank you, Senator Jennings. Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. A couple questions. I'm trying to get my arms around this deal. And let's go back to your example, Natrona County and Niobrara County. Let me track that through. The Natrona County student wants to be a distance learning student through Niobrara County. What rate does he pay? Is it the Natrona County rate or the Niobrara County rate? In other words, without even looking, I know there's a disparity. And Niobrara County is going to be up here and Natrona County down here. And if there's a difference between the compensation paid and the contract price per student or however they do those, who keeps the gravy and where? How does it get, gravy's the wrong word, the excess, whatever it is. Who keeps the slop and how do they count that? Even more, and that's just the mechanics of it. Is there a way that does this incentivize, for example, a student who may either going to be drop out or take distance learning? Is there an incentive built in? Is it made easy? Is it, do school districts use it as an alternative way to deliver education? And if there isn't an incentive, is there a way to build an incentive in as an alternative delivery system?
Thanks, Senator Schiffer. Senator Ron Flater.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it was several questions in your comment there. This bill does not deal with the many issues that I believe are in virtual schools. The good senator from Natrona County brought up some of the issues. If there was a hunting season, I guess, on children, we'd be poaching them. That's very true. Good Senator KC, this does not incentivize them. For one thing, this does cover what is probably the easiest to explain and really dollar for dollar, and that's the non-resident student. That's the child that still retains his residentship for school reasons in Natrona, but takes virtual school through Niobrara. So that's, Natrona receives their $11,000, but they write a check for about $8,400 to Niobrara. And that really is a pass-through to the K-12, the contractor, excuse me for using a proper name, but the contractor that's providing the service. So really no gain, no loss to the state on that. Natrona is still responsible for physical therapy or speech pathology, if that's what the child needs, any special needs. That still stays there. It comes under their ADM. They pay for it, transportation needs, physical education. They would still, because he's a resident student in Natrona. Now, the problem arises when he chooses, which he can, his family can choose, to leave him in Natrona. His residence is Casper for every other reason, but he chooses to be a resident of Niobrara School District. There is where your concerns come in. That is the point at which, if we're paying $11,000 in Natrona for the average ADM, if Niobrara happens to qualify for the small school boost in funding, he would be counted at that 12, 14, 18, 20,000. Now, that is a whole different issue. And I really hope Ed Committee takes that on this interim and looks at how we can equalize that. All this bill does, don't confuse this, don't kill a bill based on that. All this bill does is say the pass-through for the child that stays in Natrona, residency in Natrona for school reasons, but takes virtual school through Niobrara, K-6 through Campbell County. I think K-12 is the Teton virtual school. That's just a pass-through. We don't want to count that tuition that passes through that district and goes to a contractor against the district and their local resource funding. That is the meaning of this bill. That's all it does. It does not address any of the other issues, and I really hope the interim, we take those other issues on.
Thank you, Senator Von Flater. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, question for the opponent of the bill. And that is, what's wrong with one school district trying to go out and compete for students from the other school district? It strikes me that that's in a free enterprise system. That's what makes the world go round, a little competition. And a little competition might be a good thing in the school systems, help them keep on their toes. So I think I see that as a reason to vote for the bill. And a reason to urge the Education Committee to make this an easy and simple process.
Thanks, Senator Scott. Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What's wrong has already been explained. We have a contractor going to a school district with a small number of children or students. So the contractor cuts this deal and says, we can train all these students through the Internet at this much money. So it's not, we're picking on Niobrara, so we'll just continue. It's not Niobrara that's offering the class. It's the contractor offering the class. So the problem that we're developing in the state is that we have these contractors going around, and we're selling a package up here in one school district, another one over here. We're paying too much. If we're going to do this, and I think we should, don't get me wrong, I think we should have the distance education. If we're going to do this, let's consolidate it, buy one big package, and bring it all through the central thing. Because it's exactly the same class that you offer over here with the packages you offer over here as a package. Niobrara should be addressing the students that they have in their district. If competition is good, I agree. But it's competition on the contractor. It's not competition on the school district. This is a problem we need to fix. Whether we vote this bill up or down, this is a problem we need to address, and we need to fix it in recalibration.
Thanks, Senator Jennings. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the committee hold rises report that it is with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 41, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 41 has passed committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration? Surely. Let's go with, we'll go to the Senator Townsend first and then to Senator Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As promised, I have the second group of Newcastle Middle School members up here above you. I'd like to have them all stand up and be recognized. I want you to know that some of the ones that are older up there are not middle school students. They are parents, teachers, and guests.
Thank you.
And we always know that Senator Townsend keeps his promises, and welcome. We hope you enjoy your day in the Senate and in the legislature, students, parents, and teachers. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I have the privilege of the floor.
Yes, you may.
Mr. Chairman, I'm informed that the Paradise Valley Elementary class with Mrs. Landry, they're studying American history, and I'm informed they're in the gallery and ask the Senate to make them welcome.
Welcome, students and teachers. I hope you enjoy your day in the legislature. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 46. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 46, sponsored by the Select Water Committee, Omnibus Water Bill Planning, and Act Relating to Water Development Projects. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Elliott, Geis, Jennings, and Johnson, Senator Geis, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Geis.
Pass. And we're going to take a little trip around the state. Starting off with, we have the blue books over here in case you need more information. I've got plenty of information for you. On bill number 2, it's the Basin Planning, Environmental and Recreation Research. This is for research, and it's $75,000, and it's for research.
The next one is Bear River groundwater. Am I feeding through, or are we okay?
Senator Geis, I think you're doing excellently.
Okay. Bear River groundwater basin planning, that's in Uinta and Lincoln County. That's $175,000, and that's for a planning study over in that area. The next one is Buffalo Creek watershed study, Hot Springs County, $250,000 watershed plan. Buffalo Creek lies east of Thermopolis and runs right up along the Owl Creek Mountains. Buffalo Northwest water supply in Johnson County, $75,000. We're doing a study there because we need to hook up another water line to serve the city of Buffalo and take in some rural areas there, too. The next one is Lander Master Plan, Phase 2, Fremont County, $85,000. Master Plan, and that's a continuation of the plan we already appropriated money before. Next one is Rolling Hill Master Plan, Converse County, $250,000. That's a master plan. Rolling Hills is a little town just north of Glen Rock, Wyoming, in case you've never been there. The next one is South Circle Master Plan, Phase 2, Worski County, $30,000 master plan, and that should finish up everything in Worski County. The next one is a statewide water research, and that's $300,000. What we do there is the Water Commission contracted the university to do different plans, but the money stays in the water budget, and then when they sign a contract with the university, then they send the money over to the university so we don't lose the money. The next one is the Thunder Basin Water Plan in Niobrara County, $250,000, and that's a watershed plan over on the Niobrara River, in case you've ever been over in Niobrara County. That's not a very long river. Then you get, that finishes that up, and the total there is $1,490,000, coming out of account one. The next one will be level two projects, new development. This is all still in account one. Evansville Regional Connection in Natrona County. And what we're going to do in Evansville is going to connect to the Casper Water, system, make that one big water system. And the next one is Kemmer Diamondville Water Supply, Lincoln County, $100,000. And if you've ever been over at Kemmer or Diamondville, why, I don't know how come they're two towns, but they are. And so we're going to tie those water systems together. The next one is the Lucerne Water Supply, Hot Springs County, $150,000. And we're wanting to expand that system over on the east side of the Bighorn River. The next one is Squaw Creek Water Supply, Teton County, $175,000. It's a rural water supply, and we're having a hard time to find good water over there. The next one is Thane Storage, Lincoln County, $85,000. They need additional water storage for the town of Thane. That's where all the cheese is made. Weather Modification Product Research is $2,850,000. This is a continuation of the first appropriation that we appropriated, $8 million, was 5 years ago. And it took a long time for us to get permits on the National Forest. So the studies are going very well, and it looks like it's generating us about 10% more water. And which Utah claim with that kind of generation, it costs them about $1 an acre foot. That's better than building dams and reservoirs. Wright Well, Campbell County, $1,100,000 groundwater. We got to go find a source of groundwater over there for the town of Wright. The total of that section is $4,560,000. Now we're going down to a level two study, and this money will come out of account three. The first one we're looking at is Cottonwood Lake Enlargement. It's in Lincoln County. That's 290,000, and we're wanting to enlarge that reservoir. The next one is the Little Snake Supplemental Storage, Carbon County, 300,000, and we're looking at a stream over on Battle and Haggerty Creek and see if we could store some water there. The next one is Norwood River, Washakie Bighorn County, 250,000, and that's the drainage that comes down through Ten Sleep and takes in a whole bunch of creeks and dumps in the Bighorn River in Manerson. The next one, the Shell Valley Storage, Bighorn County, 250,000. We're trying to see if we can find an alternative for Shell over that storage area. Now we're going down to Level 2 Project Rehabs. These are all coming out of Account 2. Keystone Farmers Canal Master Plan, Bighorn Park County, 250,000. We're wanting to, they think we can consolidate a couple of canals over there and give them better water. And that's the only one in that one. The total of Section 4 is 250,000. Now we're down in Level 1 Project Rehab, and this is coming out of Account 2. Austin Well Rehab in Uinta County, 400,000. It's a reservoir and canal. The next one is Little Snake Canal, Carbon County, $100,000. And what we're looking there is to put different head gates and diversion dams in the Little Snake to help with that canal system. Shell Canal Tunnel in Bighorn County. It's 150,000. Well, there's one of those canals that comes through a tunnel, and we got to figure out how we can fix it up. It's fallen in, and that total is 650,000. Then we go down to administration, Office of Water Program. And this is with the University of Wyoming, 165,000, and that comes out of the State Water Research. Total of that section is 165,000. Total of all of these accounts is, in account one is 6,215,000. In account two is 900,000. And account three is 1,090,000. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator Geis. Questions on the bill? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion, let the committee whole rise to report to do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 46, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 46 has passed committee the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 25. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 25, sponsored by the Labor Committee, Child Care Development Fund, an act relating to public assistance and social services. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move from the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 25 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
Will the reading clerk please read the amendment?
House Bill 25, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, page 3, line 20.
Thank you, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. Mr. Chairman, the Standing Committee Amendment is pretty simple. This bill is the bill that governs a program we have that provides child care to low-income families. What the Standing Committee Amendment does is give them a better option of what to do if it looks like they're going to have more demand for the program than they have money. They're not an entitlement. They've got to live within their budget. And the way the House amended the bill, they'll be pushing up against the appropriation that is available. So it was recommended that we allow them as a first step, if it looks like they're going to run out of money, to go in and raise the parental co-payments for the higher income groups. That's what the Standing Committee Amendment does. The second step, which would be what they would have to do otherwise if they run out of money, is to create a waiting list, and they think this would be a better first step. I urge adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Are you ready for a question on the amendment? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 25, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion is passed. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I yield to Senator Honeycutt for an explanation of the bill.
Thank you. Senator Honeycutt.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 25. The committee met over the summer, and in the review of some of the ARRA monies that were being expended in the Early Childhood Development Division, revealed that they had a budget of about $13.5 million with no legislative direction. So the committee decided to establish some kind of rules and philosophy for the use of this money. We wanted to help the very lowest income people the most, of course. We wanted there to be lessened disincentives for family earnings to rise. We wanted the income to continue to go up and have an incentive for that. That is one of the purposes of this child care development plan. We also wanted to build a formula to define some co-pays, so they had a little skin in the game as well. I handed out, or had handed out, some statistics and some forms, graphs. I think if you look, the first one is a graph, kind of lists the number of people involved in this program. As you can see, the household size is on the left-hand side in that box. About 88% of the people involved in this program have household sizes of 2 to 3 to 4 people. On the bottom part, look, you can show, it shows you the 2009 federal poverty level and the family sizes, and at that level, what they can earn per family size. This will be for your late-night reading tonight, if we have time. Page 2 kind of shows you the federal poverty levels and when certain programs drop off and what it does to their income as those programs drop off and they become ineligible as they earn more money. The very end part of the graph is something we really don't want to look at this point in time. We're looking at the middle part of this graph where they lose food stamps or loss of food care. Page 3 is a chart that shows the different levels of assistance at different levels of the poverty level and also at what hourly rate they have. At the top, it shows that hourly rate. These are some of the statistics that we use to develop the copay. The next page, page 4, real briefly, is just kind of a definition of the programs that they have and tells you a little bit about those. The next page, page 5, kind of shows you the graphs with the copays involved and yet with the child care subsidy. It helps kind of level out some of the problems they have when they become ineligible at certain levels of the poverty level. I'll just kind of quickly go through the bill for you, and if you have any questions, be sure to ask them. On page 2, it talks a little bit about the program and who's administering the program and under what. Under F, it talks about the block grant program. The next section, a little I, talks about when the adjustments will take place, which is on April 1st. For those who are under the 100% level of poverty, there won't be any copay whatsoever. B is the formula that is used to develop the copays, and you can just kind of look that over. And on the next page, it gives you a chart that kind of shows you how that formula is arranged in that chart and what the copay multipliers are. If you'd like to write these down, on line 9 on page 3,
the co-pays for each of these categories. For line 9, it's a 10 cents per hour. Line 10 would be 20 cents per hour. Line 11 was 70 cents per hour. Line 12 was $1.05. Line 13 is about $1.60. And these will be using the most recent federal poverty levels, and as I said, they'll adjust every April 1st. Under section two, little eyes, this talks about what happens if they do have some money left over, that they can use some of this money to assist the daycare centers if they are providing more than 25% of the their services to low-income people. This was talked about quite a lot in the committee, but we felt that some of these daycares who are providing services to the low-income could need some assistance with just, you know, with carpets or whatever would happen that they need that wears out quickly. The department will determine the eligibility and recommend to our committee once again, any changes that would be needed in this program. So what this does is it just tries to help these people, of course, with just their child care, but also that the co-pays puts a little skin in the game and kind of levels out some of the impacts of losing eligibility as their income increases. Now, does that make sense to people? And if I have any questions...
Thank you, Senator Honeycutt. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only question I would have is what will be the net impact to those people out there trying to deal with child care that we see in our state and based on the discussions you had that during the last interim session, and what might be the impact of the state's resources in terms of what it might cost us?
Mr. Honeycutt.
The cost to us is just what comes out of AARP, if I understand your question, or AARA. it does lessen the amount of money available since there is more child care, but with the copay, it actually gives us a little bit more money. And if I can find the... the bill with the appropriations attached... On the original bill, they talk about the general fund and the anticipated expenditure decrease. So with the copays, the decrease, as I understand this, shows it would be about $800,000. And Senator Scott, you may want to explain that better for me.
Okay. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, there's a mixture of funds available here, general and federal. It's been that way. Well, I can remember Senator Strzok debating this particular bill and this particular subject on this floor. So it's been that way for a good 10, 15 years or longer. The fiscal note applied to the bill as introduced with the House committee amendments, the testimony we had in committee that the decrease in expenditure to the general fund was going to be more in the 100,000 range rather than the 800,000, because the House changed the percentages a bit. And that's what produced the Standing Committee Amendment. In case we started to run over the appropriation, we wanted a better way to cut back here. And as to the impact to the people out there, Mr. Chairman, what will happen is that in some of these ranges, particularly in the higher ranges up from 100% of the federal poverty level, the parents are going to wind up paying more, because what we've done is put in a much more graduated system of parental co-payments here. The testimony we had when we looked into this, and the reason we looked into this was they were responding to the federal stimulus dollars and using them in some ways, but in the process we inquired about the rest of the program and discovered that there was if you were eligible, you got a very small copay and most of your child care subsidized until you fell off the cliff and were no longer eligible.
And we thought a much more graduated approach where people always have the incentive to try to better themselves was a much better approach, and that's what the bill does. So it will, for some of the parents out there, particularly as you get up the federal poverty levels and get to the higher incomes that are still eligible for subsidy, they're going to have to pay a greater parental copayment. And frankly, I think that makes a lot of sense. The last thing you want to do on one of these programs is to structure a great big cliff where you lose your eligibility and you have an incentive for people to stay on the government system one way or another. And that's what we're trying to avoid.
Thanks, Senator Scott. Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This sort of reminds me of the old phrase of someone jumping out of a car somewhere in Wyoming and say, I'm from the state and I'm here to help you. I think that we ought to be concerned about this, especially when I hear that this bill is intended to help these folks. Here's the situation I thought before I read the bill, and certainly what I've heard from my constituents in Laramie. Many of the folks who are low income are single-parent families in which that single parent has at least two jobs, perhaps even a full-time job and a part-time job, and they have difficulty finding child care in Laramie, not only during the day, but also in the evenings when they work or in that time for when their children get off school until when they have a chance to get home and cook some supper. But the other problem they have is being able to afford it. The problem that we have right now in our child care industry isn't that there's too much money in it, is that there's not enough. And therefore, the mostly female workforce are having to work for really low wages because that child care center can't generate enough money to pay them decent wages. And so what this bill is going to do is take $807,000 more out of the child care industry, you know, based upon this footnote that we have. Now, I understand the reason behind it, and that is we have an incentive in our programs or a disincentive that when a family gets to a certain point, in this case 201% of the federal poverty level, suddenly the subsidies go away and there's nothing there anymore for them to help them out. But a way to remedy that problem isn't to claw back and have a gradual downhill from 100% of the poverty level to 200%, and that's what this bill is doing. If I'm reading this correctly, if you're a family of somewhere between 176 and 200% of the federal poverty level, you're now going to be asked to pay $4,000 a year in child care. Okay? And that's really problematic. They just simply don't have it. The problem that we're facing right now in our child care industry is that there isn't enough money for them to pay decent wages, and they're trying as much as they possibly can to find affordable child care. Now to suddenly try to squeeze $4,000 out of them in order to say that this is a way of getting rid of that cliff effect is going to have a devastating impact on those families, especially in light of increasing insurance rates and increasing utility rates and the fact that we're living right now in a stagnant economy. They're not getting raises out there. And in fact, for a lot of these folks who I know get subsidized child care, that I talked with in Cheyenne and Laramie, many of them are getting reductions in hours, so they're not working as much as they did previously. Finally, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to point out a companion program, the Kid Care program. There's a federal requirement that prevents the state from doing this very type of thing in the Kid Care program. Obviously, it's not doing it in child care, but in Kid Care. And the reason is because of the high cost of health care, and it prevents state from charging such high copays that it discourages people from using kid care between 133 and 200% of the federal poverty level.
Thanks, Senator Massey. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, the objective of the committee was to get a system that would be neutral, that would keep us within our appropriations, but would be neutral. And I think the committee has achieved that. And I would point out, again, that $800,000 decrease in expenditures, fiscal note, was on the bill as introduced. The House committee changed that, changed the formula,
with the result that I believe it was 95 or 96,000 was the recommendation, and they said that was as close to being revenue neutral as they could get, and they were starting to run risks of running beyond the available funds. Now, if you want to increase the subsidies, and that's, you know, I can see why people would want to increase the subsidies. It's going to require a general fund appropriation, and a significant one. And certainly that's something that you can, we can try, and you can see if there's the votes for it. But it didn't strike the Labor Committee that this was the time to go expanding the programs that we've got and expanding the demands in our general fund. And we did think that it was appropriate to ask, as you got up the scale, ask a greater parental copayment. So that's what we've done. And yes, you'll have a few constituents upset because they're going to have to pay more. We looked at the figures, and they ought to be able to afford it. But we wanted to avoid that big disincentive, Mr. Chairman, that you get with one of these things if you don't graduate them properly, or somebody falls off.
Thanks, Senator Scott. Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question, because I'm not fully understanding the ARRA funds and what effect the ARRA funds, if they're time limited, if they don't come back, what does that do? Does that put us in a position where we're now going to have to make that up in another fashion? If you could just explain that, please.
Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I ask any other members of the committee to jump in if I remember this wrong. The ARRA funds were used by this department, and there's a couple of things that they're doing with them. You'll see them in the bill, looking in the engrossed version, starting at the bottom of page 3, where it says, from funds available under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009, that's stimulus money. We're trying to do two things. We're trying to make as many of them as possible eligible to get their payments electronically, which speeds it up, gets a better cash flow for the providers, and that's important in a low-margin business. And then if there's money left over, department can provide some money for the ones that service particularly the low-income population, and there's a requirement there, and there has to be to comply with 16.6 for grants for some of the things they need. So that ARRA money is being used on a one-time basis. The basic funding for the program is a mixture of general and federal funds, and probably the Appropriations Committee could tell you about them better than I can. We've been doing that since before the welfare reform, and that's where the basic funding is. They may have used some of the stimulus money to improve the reimbursements, but I wouldn't want to be held to that. I know that was one of the things they considered doing. I think they may have decided that that was not a sound thing to do and used it in these other ways that will bring some long-term improvements for the providers.
Senator Massey. Thank you, Senator Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question then for the committee is the reason, the motivation for bringing the bill. In other words, who was asking for this? Who identified the problem? And who from the public? Was it the child care industry? Was it parents coming forward saying, you know, we would like some help with this? So in reality, the public testimony and the motivation behind the bill. The group that I did hear from were child care providers, early childhood advocates who indicated that on this point with regard to the use of the ERA money, that it was their idea and their preference to use any additional money for increased training of child care providers so that they could increase the quality of the child care that they're able to provide as opposed to supplies. And finally, Mr. Chairman, just a thought, if we wanted to be really budget neutral about this, then probably the best thing to do is just dispense with the bill.
Thank you, Senator Massey. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, when the Management Council charged the Committee 10 with responding to federal initiatives in the whole subject matter jurisdiction, we've got this is the second bill that is produced. We got a report from the department as to what they were doing with their stimulus money, and there was some concern about the way it was being used. And in the process, we got into a discussion of, you know, who's eligible and under what circumstances and how much they get, and discovered that we've got this system now that has gotten out of whack. It was supposed to be graduated. I can remember that from the debates way back when the program got started, and discovered it really wasn't, and you had this great big cliff that people were falling off. And that's what caused us, and there were several members of the House that worked on it in detail and did some very good work, trying to get a system that made more sense in terms of incentivizing people to work their way up the income scale and get off the state subsidy. So basically, a good part of the work here with redoing the payments was done on the committee's own initiative. Once we got into it, asking them what were they doing with their federal stimulus money.
Thanks, Senator Scott. Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, makes perfect sense, a lot of the discussion, except when you look at it in terms of the real world. At this point in time in this state, how are you going to work yourself up out of that? We have a lot of things for single mothers and children that are ready to go out into the workforce. And at this point in time, they've been trained. They're ready to go out to, in essence, jump off that cliff to help themselves, and there aren't any jobs. So I don't quite understand why at this point in time. I just like to know, you said problems with how the department was using, concerns of the House committee. I want to know exactly what really went into the development of something like this before we vote on it. Thank you.
Thanks, Senator Sessions. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I share the concerns of my colleague from here in Cheyenne. But part of the way this got developed is what we're doing now is almost a disincentive for someone to try and move up economically, irrespective of what the economy did. And I don't know what would happen if our economy here had kept going on at the rate it was going. But it hasn't. It's seriously dropped, and that's a problem, because those are often the people that get laid off first and all those other things. But the intent here, the thrust of it was, how do we make it possible for people, as they move up and acquire skills and all those things, how do they move into economic independence? If the transition isn't right, if that's what you're saying, I don't know whether the transition's right or not, but I know it's better than saying we're going to incentivize you up to a certain point and then we're going to boot you out into the back alley. That makes no sense at all. It just doesn't make sense. Whether the transition is correct, I don't know, but this seems like a reasonable approach to that. And there was another question raised, that in fact we're dropping the funding. I don't think, well, no, we're not dropping the funding, we are redistributing the funding, if that's the correct word, reemphasizing where the funding goes. But I would suggest to you, if you look at it in terms of the way we were doing things, really wasn't 100% successful, and I'm not sure you could go back to the 50% successful, somehow you have to make it work. And the thought is that this does make it work in terms of keeping people going, keeping people going upward economically.
Thanks, Senator Schiffer. We'll go to Senator Honeycutt next.
Just briefly, my explanation probably wasn't the best in the world, but as you look at that chart number 3 on page 3, as these people are going along and gaining more income, are getting dropped off these programs just automatically. And what we're doing is we're saying you're not going to be on our program forever, and we're not going to subsidize you at the high level forever. What we're doing is gradually weaning them off of this subsidy. And some of the statistics show that only 70% of these people are only on this program for 24 months or less. So it's not like they're on this forever until all their kids grow up or go to school and have part-time daycare. So what this is a gradual increase in their responsibility, but they're still getting money versus other programs, which just cut them off immediately. So there is that leveling of that cliff effect.
Thank you, Senator Honeycutt. Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really am trying to understand this, and I understand the problem that the committee was trying to deal with, and that is this cliff effect, and trying to put incentives for folks to work their way into a higher income level. Where I'm failing to understand, where I lose the connection, is when we're going, the incentive is that we're going to charge them an additional $4,000 for child care under 200% of the federal poverty level. That's just problematic. Folks don't have $4,000. And so it's not an incentive. They're not going to be able to afford to pay that, and they're not going to get child care. And as a result, or they'll go to unlicensed child care, or as a result, they're going to give up their jobs because they'll have to have the kids at home. I understand the problem. I just don't think that this is the solution.
Let's go to Senator Land, and then we'll go back over to Senator Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the concerns of the senator from Albany County, and whenever you rework a system, I think you're going to be able to find some bumps in the road. And certainly the 76% up to 200%, that's a little bit of a hot spot. But I would remind the body that we have added over 200 children in Wyoming will be added at that 201 to 225%. So there's a little bit of a trade-off. What we were trying to do is get a graduated scale. If you take a look at your chart, certainly 176 to 200% are going to be required to pay a little bit more for their child care than they did when they were in the 150% level. But we're not going to drop them at 200% either. We're still going to subsidize some child care from 201 to 225% now. And that's going to bring some more kids into the system with some state and federal help. So I think this was a good effort. A lot of time and effort went into it, and I think it levels this thing out to where you're not dropping families off and disincentivizing the system.
Thanks, Senator Landon. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and I would point out, let's look at the real world and the statistics. Look at the distribution of cases, and I'm going to use the July 1, 2008 to June 30, 2009 figures. You have, that are below the federal poverty level, you have 15,033 cases. Under this bill, they have no parental copay.
below the poverty level, you don't have a parental copay for the child care. The next group is 101% to 125%. That's the largest number of cases. 2,122, their copay when you work through the formula is 10 cents an hour. It's not very much, but these people don't earn very much. You look at the next group up, 126 to 150, their copay is 20 cents. When you look then at the larger group, you get into 151 to 175% federal poverty. That's a 70 cent an hour copay. That's more significant. Okay, look at the 2009 federal poverty level chart and say, pick a family size of three, which would be a mother with two small children. When you get to 150 to 175% of poverty, you're talking about an income of $27,465 a year to $32,043 a year. You're starting to get significantly up the income scale, and I think it is appropriate for those people to have a larger copay. The numbers that are actually receiving the subsidy in the higher ranges drops off dramatically. The big numbers you're talking about are in the lower ranges where the parental copays are very modest.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, I sit here and look at the copays. So what happens if you instead of, you know, eliminating the skin in the game, which I have no problem with people looking at having to look at something to pay. But what if, especially in that large area, what if you cut those? What if you eliminate those copay, or not eliminate them? What if you cut them in half? Or at least in that lower part? You know, you're making $22,000 a year, $25,000 a year. By the time you take out your taxes, your Social Security, your whatever, all the stuff you pay with two children, that's certainly not very much money to pay housing on and on and on. But anyway, give me your thoughts on reducing the copay.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, my thoughts are we've got it closely enough balanced. If you want to reduce the copay, you better have the votes for an appropriation from the general fund.
Okay. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the committee hold rise to report that it is with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 25, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
That motion has passed. House Bill 25 has passed committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is not right now. Ms. Majority Floor Leader.
And Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
So you've heard the motion? What's that? All those in favor who want to go eat lunch, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion passes. Mr. President.
Signing of a neural dex. We are that order of business, signing and roll dex. Senate and roll act number one. House of Representatives. Oh, the original House bill. Okay. Original House bill number 48. and rolled Act Number 1 from the House of Representatives.
House Enrolled Act, being Original House Bill 48.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 1, House of Representatives, being Original Senate, Original House Bill Number 48. I have so signed. Reports from standing committees.
February the 24th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agricultural, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 102, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Elliott, Geis, Jennings, and Johnson, Senator Geis, Chairman. February the 24th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 63, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 24th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agricultural, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Joint Resolution 2, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Elliott, Geis, Jennings, and Johnson, Senator Geis, Chairman.
Senator Cove.
I have privilege of the floor.
You may.
She's going to kill me, but I'm going to do it anyway. Sitting up in the balcony up here, we have the lady that we used to call on this floor, the lady with the velvet hammer. She could kill your bill for you, and you felt good about it. Sitting up here, we have the first woman president of the Wyoming Senate, April Bremer Kunst, and her daughter, Catherine.
Welcome back to the Senate, April. We're glad to see you. Senator von Pleiteren.
I have privilege of the floor.
You may.
Fellow senators, on your desk is a book called You and Your Toddler. We're not speaking of other senators. And it came from the L. Bogan Foundation. It was donated to all. They also have a book just like this called The Baby, I think, the You and Your Baby. They're great books for new parents, and I recommend that you hand that to somebody that may be able to use it.
Mr. Majority Floor, or excuse me, Mr. Vice President.
Mr. President, I apologize, but House Joint Resolution 4 has an appropriation on it, and I failed to request that it be re-referred to Committee Number 2 Appropriations. It would do so at this time.
Okay. House Joint Resolution Number 4 will be re-referred to Committee Number 2 without objections. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, if I may, I'd like to make a few comments just before the appropriate motion. Every coach has within his repertoire a two-minute strategy, and so we're at about the point where the two-minute warning has gone off in regard to this session. So things are going to get a little exciting here, and so you'll see me rushing around the floor talking to people, shifting numbers and all that to get all this to fit our time frame. But I would say, Mr. Chairman, the possibility of coming in early tomorrow will kind of depend on how things go today. So that's just a possibility. I've talked to some of the committee chairmen. It's a compromise between getting bills through committee and getting bills across the floor, and it's a kind of a delicate compromise. And I understand your frustration is a little the same as mine in getting things through committee as it is getting across the floor.
I'll watch to see where we're at. The other thing is you'll see things will go up, things will go down. There's going to be a change here over the lunch hour numbers. I've talked to those sponsors, and they'll. But look at the board, see where things are at. Right after lunch, we're going to, I think, vote on the appointments. We'll get that done. Shouldn't be too late today, we hope. We'll try to make it through many of these. I won't say all. We're doing really well. The bait is tremendous, and I can't tell you how proud I am in regard to the quality of the work product that's being done on this floor. Believe me, it doesn't go unnoticed, and so it takes time to do a quality job. Having said that, lunch in the break room is there. Our noon committees, I would hope, would have the right of way and allow them to get in front of the line. And with that, we'll make it through. We always will. Leadership may have to go to an undisclosed location, but I'll disclose that to all of you because you're special. But having said that, Mr. President, I would move that the Senate be at recess until 2 o'clock.
Senator Coe.
To announce that the PNC industry is bringing us lunch today down here. And so, lunch. There we go.
Thank you. Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet tomorrow, 20 minutes after the noon recess, up in S-14, where we will take up House Bill 77, Youth Archery Licenses, and House Bill 47, Engrossed NEPA and ESA Review.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet at 12:15 up in room S-18 to discuss the following bills. House Bill 57, Engrossed, Damage to Underground Public Utilities. House Bill 93, OSHA Penalties. House Bill 111, Engrossed, Electric Transmission Consideration of Regional Issues. House Bill 60, Engrossed, UPMIFA Expenditure Limitations. And if time permits, House Bill 94, Real Property Easements.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Corporations Committee number 7 will meet tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Committee note the time change, and everybody's got a build up. We'll meet at 7 in S-19. We just threw everything we had on the table here, Mr. President, so it'll be about starting with House Bill 15, Engrossed, Electrical Safety and Fire Prevention Revisions, House Bill 69, Secretary of State Directives Authority, House Joint Resolution 9, Engrossed, Resolution to Amend the United States Constitution, House Bill 23, Business Entities Reinstatement Fees, House Bill 34, Referendum on Adopted Ordinance Petitions, House Bill 90, Insurance Service Contracts. And this is what goes around comes around. Thank you very much for all these nice presents, Mr. President.
Yeah. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. Folks, the last day to report bills out is on Friday. So if you have bills with budgets or with appropriations that need to be re-referred, obviously if you're having your bill heard Friday morning, you need to be talking to us so we know how to get the bills re-referred, handled, and out that same day. Thanks.
Senator Session.
Mr. Chairman, there's been having been on judiciary for quite a while, several years, there's been an unfortunate incident that has occurred with some information given to the press, and I want to set the record straight. I introduced the contingency up in the balcony, and the gentleman who has worked very diligently to get Jessica's amendment passed across the nation. I have no problem with that. But what we now have heard is that he is accusing the Judiciary Committee, our chairman, the committee, of holding the bill that has come over for maximum minimum penalties on sexual offenders. And I want to go out, that is not true. There's not been any effort to do that. That bill is in a committee right now. It is not in judiciary. It will be heard in a different committee. And I'm sure the committee chair will have a fair hearing for it. So I'm taking this opportunity to say to the people in the state and to the press and anybody else that's listening. This was an unfortunate accusation, completely, totally untrue. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Announce immediately upon recess. You've heard the motion that the Senate shall stand recess until 2 p.m. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. We are recessed.